the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Hey guys, it's been a minute. A lot has happened actually since we last podcast. Most recently, Corbin Burnes named the 2021 National League Cy Young Award winner. Cool times for Brewers fans. He wins that award on Wednesday night. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Tom, obviously you have a story up at jsonline.com about Corbin Burnes winning the NL Cy Young. It's been a nice postseason so far for the Brewers. We'll get to Josh Hader as well. We'll talk about the thing that everybody wanted to talk about was innings pitched after this, and we will get to that, because that was certainly an interesting conversation that I guess I was prepared for, but maybe not I wasn't prepared maybe for the veracity of it, I guess. But just, we've talked about it before, Corbin Burnes was so lost in 2019, got everything turned around, had a very good 2020 season, and then blossomed into one of the best pitchers in baseball in 2021. This was a really close vote, deservedly so, but this is just such a special story. I mean, what a capstone. I mean, what a season for Corbin Burnes. He's got the no-hitter, he's got the Cy Young. It's just crazy to think 2 years ago, nobody could have seen this coming.
Right, right. You know, baseball writers love good stories, and why not? It's what we do for a living, right? Well, Robbie Ray kind of falls into that too. You know, he made a tremendous U-turn from struggling, not as badly as Corbin Burnes did a couple of years ago, but still, you know, he was never, you never heard his name mentioned in the same sentence as Cy Young Award.
Now, his 2020 was a disaster.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool, you know, when guys do these dramatic turnarounds. And, you know, unlike Ray, Burnes kind of got his foot in the door last year. You know, he made a huge step forward last year, and then this year, another big leap forward. But, yeah, I mean, you could statistically say he was the worst starting pitcher in 2019. And now, because he's the Cy Young Award, he can say, I'm the best starting pitcher in 2021. So, you know, we're truly in the golden age of Brewers pitching, basically, because there's never been a golden age of Brewers pitching. right now, you know, the Brewers have the Cy Young Award winner and the reliever of the year, Josh Hader. So they've got both the front and the back covered for the best pitchers in baseball. And, you know, Brandon Woodruff, let's not forget, he finished fifth. So, that Cy Young ballot has five names. You know, thank God, I think it was like 2013 or 15, they went from three to five names. Thank God there was five names this year. So at least some guys, you know, got some love that wouldn't have got it otherwise. And, you know, you and I were talking before we turned the podcast on about, you know, Julio Urias goes 20-3, unsighted.
Yeah.
Unsighted on the Cy Young finalists. So
yeah, that's your runaway winner. If this is even like 2012, he easily wins it with that win total.
Probably like unanimously, you know.
Probably, yes.
Yeah. But people, you know, thinking has evolved towards things like FIP and other peripherals, but the innings thing is, you know, what people are going to talk about this year, and that's okay. You know, that's one of the great things about these awards is people are going to talk about, you know, the MVP awards are going to get talked about a lot when they come out. And so why did Corbin Burnes, you know, have the fewest innings of the three guys? So let's look at why. He missed 2 weeks because of COVID. You put those, plug in two extra starts, say he went six innings in each one, a conservative day. Then all of a sudden he's like right there with Scherzer's innings, but still a little bit behind Wheeler's. But so why did Wheeler pitch, you know, so many more innings than Burnes? Well, they were on a five-man rotation, and the Brewers stayed with a six-man rotation because Council really wanted to protect the pitcher's arms in going from 60 to 162. And you have to say it was an overwhelming successful plan, because the Brewers pitching is what got them to the postseason. And also they ranked, you know, among the best in baseball as a staff. So you have to say, and Freddie Peralta missed a little time with a sore shoulder, but the other top starters did not. And so, and look at all the other guys. Ask Jacob DeGrom how it worked for him, you know, trying to do a regular workload. So, but, and then the other thing, the Brewers had a great bullpen and the Phillies did not. So, Joe Girardi was more apt to ask Wheeler to squeeze one more inning out and go from 7 to 8. But Council was not, because he had that Boxberger, Devin Williams, Josh Hader trio going most of the time, 7, 8, 9. So he didn't have to, you know. And so there's where the innings difference was. So then you say to yourself, okay, if you want to draw the line there, that's fine. That's okay. But what about all the other special circumstances? You know, in terms of baseball history, Burns had it all over Scherzer and Zach Wheeler. He had, as I pointed out in my story in JS Online, he had three major historical footnotes to his season. In any given year, you'd love to have one. Well, he had three. He became the first pitcher ever to strike out 58 batters to start a season without issuing a walk. I'm not sure people realize how crazy that was. You know, guys coming out of camp usually aren't dialed in on their control right away. You know, quite often they walk the very first guy they face, you know, because they're all hepped up to go start the season and they're just not dialed in on their command. So that was outrageous that he struck out 58 guys before walking somebody. And then he became one of only three pitchers in baseball history to strike out 10 consecutive batters in a game at Wrigley Field. You know, I want to say, JR, does this sound right? I think he had 15 strikeouts that night without throwing 100 pitches. Does that sound right? Or not many more than 100.
I don't remember the exact pitch count, but it was efficient. It was a very efficient 15 strikeout performance.
Yeah, because Council just didn't let him go much over 100, you know, while trying to save bullets and save their arms. And then the third thing was, and it was a little bit controversial to Brewers fans who would have loved to have seen Burns go the full nine. He pitched the first 8 innings of the team's first no-hitter since 1987. Only I've been around long enough to have seen that game also.
Yeah.
And so just look at those historical footnotes. And then, you know, some of his peripherals were nutty good, you know, strikeouts per innings, walk, strikeout ratio, home. You know, this is a guy that couldn't stop giving up home runs in 2019. This year he led all the majors in fewest home runs per 9 innings. So just an incredible turnaround, remarkable domination. I mean, he was dominant. That's the only – when he pitched, he was dominant.
He was dominant. He becomes the first Brewers Cy Young winner since 81-82 when Raleigh Fingers and Pete Vukovich won it back-to-back. You'll get a lot of people tell you that Pete Vukovich is one of the guys who may be least deserving over the historical canon of Cy Young Award winners. And 81 was a weird season. It was strike-shortened. Fingers was the Cy Young MVP. So I won't call that a fluke, but that was certainly a unique situation. And you could go back to 1957, too, the Milwaukee Braves World Championship season. Warren Spahn winning the Cy Young. Same year, Hank Aaron won the MVP. That year as well. As far as the innings count go, a couple things jump to mind. I'm actually kind of surprised we didn't hear more about his two-week loss due to COVID. I mean, he said he didn't get the vaccine. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's obviously.
Don't think he ever did.
Okay, he did not indicate. He declined to indicate whether or not he got it.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's top of mind for Wisconsin sports fans right now with what's going on with the Green Bay Packers. And that, like you said, That costs him two starts, and those two starts match him with Max Scherzer. You know, like that's right. not really what people are talking about in terms of the comparison. They're comparing him to Zach Wheeler's much larger workload, but you know, then I think it's a little bit more tenable for people. And a writer from The Ringer named Michael Bauman, not the Milwaukee sports writer Michael Bauman, but another guy wrote a thing that I thought really resonated with me about. It ends up becoming a vote for values. It's not even about the specific pitchers. It's more what you value. And you talked about how it's evolved. It used to be wins were the big metric. Well, then it became more about, you know, different other things. You know, let's not consider wins as much. We'll look a little deeper at ERA and WHIP and things. And now you've got these other stats, which maybe tell you an even better story or a more detailed story. You've got WAR, FIP, things like that. Then also there's a pushback to that. Like, well, but what about innings, you know? Right.
And this is why we have 30 voters in the BBWAA.
Yes.
JR, 30 voters. This isn't a panel of 5 people. And it's not a panel of anybody. You know it? It's two writers in for each team, for each city, 30 guys. And that volume of voting is supposed to like throw out the arbitrary weirdness that might happen, or also just validate how most people feel. And it was still one of the closest Cy Young votes in history. Only the second time in the National League that first and second both got the same number of first place votes. And this is, you know, we talk a lot within the BBWA about lining up your votes correctly, and don't just put the guy in first and then fill in from there any way you want, or start doing provincial voting or whatever. This was really important, the way the five names were lined up, because Burns won on second through third place votes, really. You know, that's where he really picked up a lot of voting points. And people say, I don't think people realize that a 10-point difference, how tight that is. It doesn't sound that tight, but now I was like, what, I think the fourth closest Cy Young vote ever. You know, 10 points is not much over the number of points that you can get, you know. So, I mean, just look at Robbie Ray, just ran away with the other race. I'm glad the AL, I think they were flipping it back and forth. It was already predetermined, but the AL went first, and it was good to get the, you know, Robbie Ray got 20. So the controversy there is, why didn't the 30th guy vote for him? You know?
I know. It's ridiculous.
Because it's always something. Somebody's always wrong, you know. But I mean, we're totally transparent on the BBWA. We put the votes up right away. Who voted what? Who did what? You know? So I voted for MVP. My ballot, as soon as it's announced, I'll you know, tweet my ballot out, but you can find it on the BBWA site, which anybody has access to. So it's totally transparent, but this is why you have 30 guys, you know? And so, you know, this was one of those years where any of the three guys wins, there'll be the usual debate, but no one would say robbery. You know what? Oh, it was robbery. You know, these are three really good. You know, you can make a case. I could probably pick out 15 seasons where any of the other two guys would have also won. You know what?
Absolutely.
I mean, this was a crazy. How many no hitters do we have this year? 9.
Yeah.
It was a crazy good pitching year, and there were crazy good candidates. You know, so I think it was cool. How about Brandon Woodruff with a 9-10 record, finishing fifth? Finishing fifth.
Yeah. Wins and losses have been devalued to the point that I don't think voters even truly consider that at all, which I personally think is a good thing.
They were really devalued on the Brewers rotation this year.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'll be honest.
I mean, Brent Suter should have been Cy Young.
Yeah. You know, I really thought this was going to come down to Burns and Scherzer. I was shocked.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Although the Wheeler workhorse innings thing did gain a lot of traction at the end, you know.
Yeah.
But Scherzer was so nutty good in his 11 starts. Actually, the first 9, not so much the last 2. But he was nutty good with the Dodgers. And then in that big market, everybody looking at him with the Dodgers chasing the Giants, you just want, while the Brewers had it on cruise control after, you know, running away with the division, you just wondered if that late momentum would push Scherzer over the top, but he did kind of have 2 stinkers at the end.
Yeah, it's funny because I knew it was going to be so close that when Corbin Burns gave up a home run, he had a really short last start in the regular season finale. It was a 3-run homer, and I thought, oh, that actually, in a race this close, that actually might play a difference, just a recency bias sort of thing, especially given that he wasn't going to go very long into that start. Didn't I think it was only 2 innings, maybe 3 innings, I don't remember for sure.
Right, and a struggling and watered-down Brewers offense getting 1 run off of Walker Buehler in that final weekend.
Right.
Stopped him from winning the ERA award.
Yeah, I could have easily seen. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios where Walker Buehler gets into this, factors into this as well. As you, to put a bow on this, as we were saying before we started this, it's not that the voters got it wrong. Like, they basically gave the same first place votes to Corbin Burns and Zach Wheeler, and it was like basically the voters both thought they should be Cy Young. They just split hairs a little bit, and Corbin Burns came out on top that way. So,
right.
You know, it's not an injustice or anything. For people who feel strongly about the innings, it's just the 2 very good pitchers.
You can disagree, but like I just said, this is not robbery.
No.
These are very deserving candidates, and it was a very close race, you know. And we thought it would be, you know, a lot of people, I think NL MVP might end up being like that too. But a lot, everybody, I mean, this was one where you didn't know till they said the name who was going to be. So, and how about the ML Network's Deke, a Dodger guy, Hershiser, doesn't announce the Dodgers name. And then it was the AL. Who did that? Who announced the
Jack McDowell, the White Sox.
Yeah, so didn't announce the White Sox guy.
After you had Bruce Bochy, a Giants manager, give the manager of the year to Gabe Kapler, and Johnny Bench, a Reds great, giving the rookie of the year to Jonathan India. Like, it seemed pretty telegraphed to me. I was a little worried that's how it was going to play out.
Yeah, once you saw Earl Hershiser, you said, oh, boy.
Yep. The only thing, though, Jack McDowell's presence, because Lance Lynn wasn't thought of as one of the two guys who could win it. So I thought that maybe that made me think twice about it. But still, yeah, that was an interesting deke.
And poor Bruce Bochy waiting for the information.
Yeah, it's great.
Would somebody tell me whose name I should announce? I love that he wasn't going to just say, I mean, everybody knew it was Kapler.
Yeah.
But he wasn't going to do an Academy Awards thing. But you announced the wrong movie, you know. He just wasn't going to do it.
Yeah, Craig Counsell taking second in the manager of the year voting. We all pretty much saw that coming.
And so let's talk about that for just a second. So, you know, instead of just fitting Counsell for the bridesmaid dress because he's been run up three of the last 4 years, let's look at body of work there. Because do you notice how a lot of the other names have changed, but he's like always in it, you know? Yeah. 1 year Snicker wins, 1 year it's, you know, this guy, 1 year it's Kapler, 1 year, you know, he hasn't won it, but he's always like in there every year, which is telling you something about his body of work. You know, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but manager of the year, we should really change the name of that award to manager whose team did way better than was forecast.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, absolutely.
That's who it goes to. You know, the Giants, Pecota had the Giants at 0% to win the division at the start of the year, which I think Pecota should be disbanded for that because they were 100% wrong. I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
I'm a Pecota fan, yes, that was a miss.
Nobody saw that one coming. And there's a guy who got fired in Philadelphia for supposedly not being a very good manager, right? So, But Counsell, you know, deserves mention that he's always in there. You know, I think every year they got him on TV and talking to him because they get those three guys in there. And every year he knows it's not going to be him. You know, he kind of knew it was going to be Snicker. I think he kind of knew. Who did he lose it to the other year?
Wasn't it Schilt?
Yeah, Schilt. Yeah. How about that, too? Don't you love a manager of the year candidate who got fired?
That seems to happen. Not all the time, but like in the NBA and stuff, I feel like a guy won coach of the year not that long ago, shortly after the team moved in a new direction.
Yeah.
It's.
But don't you think the team does wonder just at least 1% did we screw up by firing the guy?
Yeah.
If he's a manager of the year candidate. So the old philosophical differences will get you every time. So just being in those three finals, and you know, we call them finals. The top three vote getters is what they are. You know, that's they announce, you know, we're basically announcing a week ahead of time who the top three placeholders were. And so it's not like it's a finalist and then they were picked from that. So let's clear up two voting things that I think a lot of people get confused on. One is they don't name the finalists and then you vote and pick one of those three. Those finalists were the top three vote getters, and then it's revealed later who was number one. So there's no more voting that goes on after the finals. And the other thing is, because people say, well, how is Brian Snicker not manager of the year? All voting is done at the end of the regular season, and the postseason has nothing to do with anything. So, you know, we turn them in at the end, and although, you know, Burns had 6 shutout innings against Atlanta, wouldn't have hurt his case any. But we vote at the end, and there's no voting after the finalists are named.
Yeah.
So let's just, you know, just to throw that out there for the people who get confused about that.
And, I mean, if you want to be in the Brian Snitker camp, I mean, you got the World Series trophy, so congratulations to that. But if we're going to consider a handful of games in October, then you also have to keep the Cardinals' ridiculous 17-game winning streak in September in mind as well. It's the same sample of games.
Exactly.
And the Cardinals won them all to get back into the playoffs. So to me, that's almost the similar accomplishments. Obviously, the stakes are higher, the competition better in the postseason. But
I mean, unlike last year when they only played 60 games and they let 16 teams in.
Yeah.
This was back to the 162 and back to the 10 teams. I mean, there are a lot of good teams that make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
So and the Giants had to win 107 games to win the division by one game. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is. And what makes Kapler's, it's usually when Pakoda is wrong, it's because guys got hurt or somebody was added to the team that you weren't expecting who ended up being a big contributor. I mean, the Giants just like had their old dudes and they were all good at the same time, like Darren Ruff and Kevin Gausman. I mean, these are guys that I don't think anybody considered world beaters at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, nobody saw Logan Webb coming.
Right. You know,
and all the other guys like Posey and Brandon Crawford and Longoria and people like that looked like they were on the downside. They had peaked and were biding time, just marking time to the end of their careers. And instead, they all like had one of, if not the best years ever. So just one of those things that happened. You know, it's baseball. You know, you can't predict it. But those guys were good from start to finish. You know, the Brewers really competed well against the Giants, too. So it would have been interesting if those two teams could have ended up playing each other, but they didn't. Just a lot of fascinating things. It's why baseball is the greatest game. There's no more. The other sports don't have near as much variance as baseball has. And that's because nobody plays 162 games but baseball.
Yep.
You play that many games over that much time, there's going to be some variance.
Yep. And no issue with Kapler winning. I think if you are second place 3 out of 4 years, you're a pretty good manager. So Craig Counsell may not be a manager of the year yet, but he certainly has guided this team to some pretty cool stuff here.
And I like the little footnote that Kapler and Counsell were teammates on the team that finally ended the madness in Milwaukee in 08. Finally ended them at 26 years without playoffs. They were on that team. So I love little footnotes like that.
Yeah.
So many paths cross, pull apart, and then recross again down the road in baseball. So
while we're on 2008, we should just say CeCe Sabathia took fifth in the Cy Young voting with 130 innings with the Brewers. Obviously, he threw a bunch with Cleveland as well prior to that. Dude should have gotten a lot better, a lot more votes. If this had been 2021, CeCe Sabathia would have been a serious contender for the Cy Young Award. But that was a different time, different rubric then, I guess you could say. Josh Hader wins National League Reliever of the Year. He has won it 3 times out of 4 years. And the only year he didn't was last year when Devin Williams, his teammate, turned the feat. Obviously, we've talked about him, one of the most dominant guys at his position. It had me actually reliving that 2015 trade that brought him here because the deal that got vetoed with the Mets before they ended up finding a trade partner in the Astros would have brought Zach Wheeler to Milwaukee.
Yes.
So that's an interesting sliding door.
Another one of those interesting paths crossing, uncrossing, and recrossing, right?
Yeah. And then Mike Fiers never goes to Houston, and maybe we don't ever find out about the trash can scandal. That's a whole a lot of cans of worms there. But
and how different would the Brewers' future have been if they get Zach Wheeler and Wilmer Flores instead of the four guys they got, two of which are still prominently helping the team, Hauser and Hader, and the other two, Domingo Santana and Brett Phillips, were flipped for guys that helped them make it to the postseason. So, I mean, that's been the trade that keeps on giving for the Brewers.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So Hader, again, dominant, another dominant season. He, as you mentioned, finished off that no-hitter, but that was just the tip of the iceberg. The big question is whether or not the Brewers, how long he's going to be a Brewer. But we've been talking about that now for a few off seasons. The arbitration thing, his price tag is going up. But if we're talking about the best reliever in baseball, that's still a fair price. Whatever they're going to pay, it's not going to be free agent money. It's going to be just arbitration money. It's still going to be manageable in a vacuum. but the Brewers aren't managed in a vacuum, and they need a bat, and it seems like they've got a lot of depth in the bullpen. A guy like Devin Williams could be your closer if you needed to go in that direction. I don't know if a team is going to move a bat for a reliever, no matter how dominant, but I don't know. What is your sense on Josh Hader? Maybe it's just too foggy to forecast with the labor issues and everything, but what do you think happens this offseason with Hader?
Yeah, I mean, I do think the Brewers, you know, think they're still in this window of winning. You know, they've been to the playoffs four straight years after being in the playoffs four times, what, in the first 47 years? So I do think they're still in the window of winning, especially with their pitching now. But if you blow a hole in the back of the bullpen by trading Hader, I just don't see how you recover from that. Not in the short term. I mean, it's not like there's another Hader going to be ready to pitch for him next year. And you can say Devin Williams, you know, could maybe be the closer, but, you know, he hasn't done that yet. And he also, you know, has had some injury problems. You know, Hader never gets hurt. You know, he's always ready to pitch. And which is a credit to him and his conditioning. He is just a conditioning nut. Preparation is so much part of his game. So, and what would be the proper value in a trade for Hader? What could you get back that you could convince Brewers fans was better than having Hader? And I'm serious about that. What could you get back? You know, and then how much would a team give for a guy who's just going to pitch the ninth inning and who's a free agent in 2 years? So I'll tell you what, considering the rumors around David Stearns, how crazy would Brewers fans get it like they traded him to the Mets right now. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, we're going to talk about David Stearns, but you know, one of the factors in this labor negotiation is there's a thought that the playoffs are going to expand, not to the 16 team bonanza that was 2020, but that maybe we get another team in per league or more than that. I mean, and that you could look at that a couple ways. You could say, well, building a great regular season roster is no longer the thing. But I tell you what, when you get into the playoffs, if you get hot and you have that dominant closer like a Josh Hader, I mean, the Brewers' window here is pretty wide open. If you look at the pitching, if they get back to the playoffs next year, they're going to be a team that can win it. We just saw a team win it that had not a mediocre regular season, but by comparison, wasn't the team you thought would go on the run. And they got hot and they did it. Like, the Brewers can do it. The Brewers can win a World Series if they get to the playoffs, but it sure helps to have that absolute hammer at the back of the bullpen. I think he's just more valuable to the Brewers in a potential postseason run than he would be, you know, to shore up or, like, you know, get a couple more bats. I don't know. I
think the Brewers were like 76-1 when leading after 8. And I think the one loss was when Garcia dropped the fly ball in right field against the Giants with two outs in the ninth. So, I mean, they just don't lose games at the end. You know what? And that makes all – look at all the teams who are just tormented by the fact that they just can't close games out. You know what?
Philly's among them.
Yeah, one of the things that separated the Brewers from the Cardinals at the end, even with the 17 wins in a row, is the Brewers were just over the course of the whole season way better in the bullpen, you know, and locking games down. And they really turned – when you have the starting staff they had and then you have kind of a lockdown bullpen, you know, they were so good, as I mentioned, with Boxberger, Williams, and Hayden covering 7th, 8th, and 9th regularly. They just – it was just, I mean, you know, you'd have a hard time convincing me that wasn't the best Brewers pitching staff ever from top to bottom.
I want to take a quick break and tell you a little bit about my former colleague and good friend, Meg Jones, somebody that we miss very much. Meg Jones was a tremendous storyteller, tremendous writer, longtime writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, a lifelong Wisconsinite. We lost her in the past year to cancer, and we're still mourning that loss very much. She's somebody who wrote a lot about the military for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, took trips overseas, places like Afghanistan, to write about Wisconsin members of the military. She wrote about space travel. She wrote about such a wide variety of things and was a huge sports fan, huge fan of the Milwaukee Bucks and certainly the Green Bay Packers and Badgers. Actually was in the Wisconsin Badgers band, the fifth quarter group that comes on the field during football games. She was there as a student and part of the alumni band as well. A tremendous sports fan, and so a lot of journalists, including members of the Milwaukee Press Club, have begun the Meg Jones Scholarship Fund. If you have any interest in donating to this fund, You can find more information at megjonesfund.org/donate. Again, megjonesfund.org. If you simply search Meg Jones Scholarship Fund on Facebook, you can find a lot more about her and the various things that she wrote about. She was just such a great person. And the fundraiser for the scholarship just launched November 11th on Veterans Day, fittingly, a day to celebrate veterans. And she herself was somebody who spent a lot of time writing and thinking and talking about the military, and so we thought this was a perfect time to kick things off. You can make checks out to the MPC Endowment Limited Fund if you are willing to donate, but if you go to the website, you can find PayPal, other ways to donate, a lot more information there, and help along the next generation of journalists. She's somebody who was certainly a marvel in the craft, and it's pretty cool to be able to honor her, commemorate her memory this way. Yeah, so you mentioned David Stearns, and the Mets did hire, what did I see? They hired Billy Epler to be their general manager, but I think the poll quote I saw was unbelievably competent, which sounds like the weakest vote of confidence. I'm sure it was taken out of context or whatever, but this flirtation with David Stearns has gone on multiple seasons at this point, and, you know, I think with Epler getting a four-year deal, that probably puts what I thought was going to be kind of a really awkward conflict issue to rest, and that being the Mets saying, reports that they would be willing to wait a year until David Stearns' contract is up, and I think you've reported others that we think that's a team option coming up after this season, so he might still be under.
Yeah, we're a little uncertain about that, but I've had people tell me that they have an option, and then other people say no, it's a mutual option.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, they just are never forthcoming about that stuff. It'll be interesting to see if Attanasio calls off the jam and like does some type of extension or whatever, or else it'll just keep percolating out there. So I just, you know, so somebody has to be floating that stuff out there. It doesn't just materialize out of thin air. So I wonder if Attanasio has already talked to the commissioner's office about tampering here. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Why isn't this tampering? You know, if the Mets are letting it be known that they're willing to wait a year for Stearns, just that should be kept to themselves, because floating it out there to the media, I just don't get why that's not tampering.
And I mean, you just brought it up. Like, the obvious conflict here is, how can you trust that your general manager isn't going to put a potential new team in position to succeed down the road, you know, this season? If he thinks he's going to be with the Mets someday, what's going to stop him from making a decent trade that helps the Mets too? And obviously no one thinks that there's, you know, David Stearns is a professional. That's not going to happen. Yes. But you don't want that as a thought either.
Yeah, we kid him all the time that he must have known he was going to succeed Melvin, because he was on the other end of that trade we just talked about. He was the assistant GM that did the Gomez Fires trade. So he ended up inheriting all that goodness that he traded to the Brewers. But of course, he didn't know that at the time. And, you know, I'm not sure even how much say he had in it, because, Lunau was the GM. It's going to be hard for that not to just keep percolating in the background if it isn't called off, if the jam isn't called off in some way. So, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see if Attanasio in any way addresses that publicly, whether it be extending Stearns or putting it out there that, yes, we do have an option on him, or just saying, I'm accusing them of tampering. Just any of those things. I'd be interested to see if it happens. But they're awful quiet about how they conduct that kind of business.
We heard Matt Arnold's name, the Brewers assistant GM, before he I guess, was one of many people who took his name out of consideration for the Mets GM spot. So the Mets like what they see from the Milwaukee Brewers, and they should. I mean, you just said it, four straight years of postseason. And like I said, if the playoffs expand next year, you maybe will need to throw in the caveat of how 2020 worked or the fact that things did expand. But there's no reason to think this Brewers run is going to end anytime soon. Only the Cardinals are really even trying at this point in the NL Central. Right. So the Brewers should feel very comfortable about the 2022 season, assuming there is baseball in 2022. Right. And beyond, especially if the playoffs, you know, expand. So
that's why I don't see trading Hader now, because, I mean, they're like, this is how far away they are of like winning the World Series next year. Christian Yelich and Keston Hira relearning how to hit. You know what? I mean, if they can perk their offense back up, you know, they've got the pitching to be really good, and more coming. You know, I don't know if you've been seeing Ethan Small's been pitching great in the Dominican Winter League, and you know, we saw Aaron Ashby be filthy at times last year. I mean, they probably have enough pitching depth where they could actually trade out of it a little bit if they wanted to. Now, I'm not sure how anxious they are to do that because they have control of all of those guys for a while too. None of them are going to be free agents after next year, including Hader. You know what? So the prices are going up, but not as much as, I mean, look at the first couple of free agent signings out there. 21 mil for a year for Syndergaard and 26 mil for a year Verlander. Two guys coming off Tommy John surgery. You know, and Eduardo Rodriguez got a bunch of money. And so I think the Brewers feel pretty good about what they're paying their pitching staff.
Yeah, it is a crazy market already. And I'm actually kind of surprised. I wasn't sure how many moves we'd see before the labor issues got sorted out. We're a couple weeks away from what we assumed to be a lockout, you know, unless the two sides, the players union and the owners, come to an agreement that we're not expecting at this point. So not a lot of big ticket items, but you know,
those, but let's those see guys what happens in the next couple weeks, because maybe teams are trying to get their big stuff done before a possible lockout, you know, because if that goes on through the rest of the winter, there will be no transactions allowed.
Right, exactly.
And then let's say they then reach a CBA agreement like a week before spring training or right when it was supposed to start, and there's still a gazillion guys out there. I mean, it's going to be signing madness, you know it? So, and it'd be interesting to see if, you know, we start seeing some trades and stuff too. So I do wonder if some guys will try to get in ahead of the, you know, a possible lockout, what they're hearing. You know, it's been awful quiet between the union and the management. So maybe that's a good sign. So,
yeah.
I mean, this would be a great time for them to fool us and actually agree on something, wouldn't it?
What would that be, the first time in history that actually happens?
Well, both sides got to realize the last 26 years have been the best ever for both sides financially because there's been no labor or stoppage. You know what? And I think it'd be particularly tone deaf with the COVID thing, you know, having a work stoppage now. Because look at the grief they caught last year just from arguing over money last year during COVID.
Yeah, it was a bad time. The Brewers have made a few smaller transactions and a couple reasonably big newsy moves here. They acquired Mike Brousseau from the Tampa Bay Rays. You might remember him as a guy who had a really big home run against Aroldis Chapman in the 2020 postseason. Yeah. But more of a utility guy. They signed a pitcher named Trevor Gott. And then the guys they let go are the bigger stories. Avisail Garcia, no qualifying offer for him, as expected. He's going to make a lot of money on the open market. He will most certainly not be back next year for the Milwaukee Brewers in the outfield. And then Manny Pena, backup catcher, longest tenured Brewer, I believe, officially.
Yes, longest tenured Brewer, yeah. So
he signed with the world champion Atlanta Braves. So
I'd say that would be something to be upset about if you didn't look at the contract the Braves gave him. This is my feeling on the contract he got from the Braves. Way to go, Manny.
Absolutely. Make your money, baby. That's great.
I mean, he played for $1.65 million last year. Now he's going to get $4 million AAV for 2 years to be the backup catcher. So at age 34, too, not at age 24. So I'm not sure what's going on with the Braves catching. I thought they were better off than that. But good for Manny. Good for man. And boy, is he a good guy. And we might see him come back around as a coach at some point because he certainly has that type of potential. Just a really good guy, a really good Brewer, a really good teammate. You know, kind of reminds me a lot of Carlos Gomez. You know, just a guy that fit in so good and loved being a Brewer, you know, and got his chance here. And, you know, he did hit a lot of big home runs last year. He didn't hit well for average or anything, but and defensively, if you run on him, you're out, you know. So yeah, good for Manny. But the Brewers do have to figure out some catching stuff now. And I do wonder, you know, they outrighted Luke Maley a few weeks back and he chose to be a free agent. I wonder if now they'll just re-sign him because he knows their pitchers, they like him. He's just like Manny, a really good defensive catcher. hasn't always hit, although he did hit a little bit for the Brewers.
Yeah, he had a great run with the Brewers. I mean, short sample, but
for me, you got to go back and re-sign him. That's the guy, you know, because the learning curve just goes back down to zero because he knows all the Brewers pitchers. So I'll be real surprised if we don't see them re-sign Luke Maley.
Mario Feliciano waiting in the wings. Brewers saw him for one game this year, but he's still pretty young, learning. He's probably not big league ready.
Missed a lot of time for the shoulder injury. If he had played a full AAA season, you could maybe do it, but he only played like 40 games. Yeah. He's doing very well in the Arizona Fall League, but he's not. And I think I saw a story, I think in The Athletic, in which David Stern said, you know, our plan is to pair him with a veteran catcher next year in AAA and let him get some more playing time. So he is going to be their catcher one day, I do believe, but probably not next year.
Sure. One last thing, the Brewers, since we last spoke, got some new hitting coaches, Andy Haynes and his staff. I'm already drawing a blank on the
Chicken
name of the
Cruz.
Chicken Cruz. Yep. The assistant hitting coach. They were relieved of their duties essentially. And then the Brewers brought in two new guys, Ozzie Timmons and Connor Dawson as hitting coaches. I mean, you kind of alluded to it already that it feels like right now the hitting coach's job number one is fix Christian Yelich. Job number two is fix Keston Hira, and all the other jobs can wait. I'm sure it's more complicated than that, but I'm sure that's what's being impressed upon the Brewers' newest members of the coaching staff.
Yeah, and what a fascinating combination. Timmons, a veteran guy who played a lot of years professionally, has been a major league coach, you know, very well established. And then Connor Dawson, who never played professionally, only been a coach a few years in Seattle's system, a fast riser, a guy that I heard knock their socks off in their interview, but kind of a new trend we're starting to see. One of the Giants hitting coaches and one of Seattle's hitting coaches are like that. They did not play professionally. You know, it's more what you know about the mechanics and analytics and technology of hitting now than your own playing experience. And so I've heard that Dawson's a real go-getter and just a winning type personality. So, but it's going to be interesting. I think they really went for the frickin' frack there. You know what? The veteran guy and the young guy, and then hoping for a nice blend. Plus, they're still going to name an assistant, pick an assistant for those guys too. So what we're learning, I think the Giants had three hitting coaches this year. What we're learning now is that hitting has become so, the information is so overwhelming that you got to have more than one guy running the show. And so the question is to make sure that the communication is good and everybody's on the same page and that there's no conflicts by splitting up duties like that. And I think they'll figure it out.
Yeah, I kind of love it. I kind of love the rethinking of coaching staffs a little bit that, you know, for a long time it was just, you know, you've got a first base and a third base coach and they're in charge of, one's in charge of, you know, maybe the outfield defense, one's in charge of the infield defense, somebody's in charge of catchers. Like everything was just very, I wouldn't say binary, but it was kind of by the book. And now we're seeing a little bit of an expansion. Coaching staffs are getting a little bit bigger. And like you said, there's so much information, some logical, mechanical, and some data driven. It's nice to have more than one voice in there. I like what they did. I like the approach.
Right. And it's become a divide and conquer type thing. We have new names, hitting strategists, you know, and the minor league hitting coordinator, you know, is kind of the conduit from the big leagues to the minor leagues. And just they've all got to be rowing in the same direction, pulling on the same end of the rope. And they're just sort of figuring that. And it makes sense with the amount of information and technology that is out there now to have the divide and conquer. You know, why pile everything on one guy when two or three people can split it all up? And it gives you more voices, too, because Coach A may not help this certain player X, but Coach B might, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's no such thing as having too many smart baseball people. There's no such thing. That's like saying I got too much talent, you know? still waiting for the first manager to say, stop giving me all this talent. Please stop it.
Yeah, it's like that in front offices too. I find myself playing a game of, well, who's the genius? You know, like David Stearns is great, but is Matt Arnold the guy pulling the strings, or is Steve Carsey the secret to the Brewers' pitching success? I mean, I'm just throwing names out there, but
well,
like
the answer is probably all of the above.
Exactly. Right? Yep. It's more of a collaborative. It's a team effort. You know.
Remember 3 years ago when Darren Johnson left, and the gnashing of teeth was so loud it was like a leaf blower.
It's true.
Out in your yard, because and then the Reds' pitching got so much better next year. And people just lost their, you know what? Well, are we hearing any of that now? Chris Hook, people kind of did Chris Hook now, you know what?
Yep. Well, he was there. He was in the organization working with all of these guys. He was and now it's like, oh, he was kind of an irreplaceable piece of the puzzle, it turns out, or it sure seems like it. You know, yeah. What do we actually know? But yes, it's gone quite well for Chris Hook. He's going to be here for quite some time at this point. Any last thoughts, Tom? I don't know. Your winter's maybe going to get a little colder when if this labor stoppage happens like we think it is, there won't be much baseball to discuss.
Yeah, nobody wants that, JR. So just the only other thing is tomorrow, Friday, is the deadline for protecting players on your 40-man roster. I don't think the Brewers have a ton of, like, prospect candidates that, like, you know, like when they added Feliciano, you knew they didn't want him to get away and guys like that. And I don't think they've got a ton of those guys. A lot of their top prospects are younger, you know, and don't have to be protected yet. So Todd Rosiak and I are working on our new Journal Sentinel top 10 list, and you're going to see some new names and some reconfiguring there. Then so that's something that hopefully readers can look forward to in the coming weeks. We got a couple of, the tender date on December 2nd and stuff like that. But let's all, everybody's kind of crossing their fingers on this CBA thing now. I don't think we want a nuclear winter.
Right. Jefferson Caro. That's a name that I'm interested in, maybe because it's kind of fun to say. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but.
Yeah, Jefferson with one F. It's not like Thomas Jefferson.
Nope.
So two really young guys are in our top 10, Jefferson Caro and Hedbert Perez. And so there's a lot. And let me just tell you one other thing. The Brewers are looking really good in center field prospect depth right now. I mean, that year Joey Weimer had was unbelievable.
Yeah, one of the breakouts in all of minor league baseball this past season. And I know he got dinged up a little bit, so didn't get to shine in the offseason league here. But I'm trying to remember, was that the Arizona fall?
Arizona, he had a bruised thumb, but the good news is nothing big, you know. But he was tearing it up before he got that, you know. So, so I think their farm system, you know, which was rated like bottom three for a few years, it's moving on back up now. They're restocking pretty good. They've done some good drafting and some good international signing.
Cool. Yeah, well, Lorenzo Cain about to head into his last year of his contract with the Brewers, so it makes sense that they would need somebody.
Yeah, some of these center fielders ought to hit just about right with Garrett Mitchell and Sal Frelick. You know, some of these guys are going to hit just about right in their readiness, meeting the Brewers' need.
Yep, exactly. He is Tom Haudricourt. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Like we mentioned at the top, story about Corbin Burnes winning the Cy Young. Very cool moment for Milwaukee Brewers and their fans and Corbin Burnes himself. That, again, you can find that at jsonline.com. Check out all the deals we have. 6 months for $1 last I checked at jsonline.com/deal. And get some digital access. Lots of sports going on right now. Packers, Badgers, college basketball kicking in, Bucks. You're going to want all that. So, Tom,
yes, we have no supply chain command issues, right? We
can not yet.
You want a subscription? We can get you one.
It's true. All right, Tom, thanks for joining us. We will chat with you again very soon.
Thanks, JR.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. He is Tom Haudricourt. My name is JR Radcliffe. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you again very soon on the Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast. Take care.